Zé Paulo, anda aqui pra cama. Ó, Zé Bonito, larga no baila. Anda aqui pra cama, pra minha loira.
Ó, Zé Paulo, tem calma que eu já vou.
Anda a casa,
mamãe, papai. Tenho uma novidade.
Ó, Zé Bonito, vai aqui pra cama, já são 10 horas.
Eu tenho uma namorada.
A minha mais no baila. Ó, Zé Bonito, Zé Bonito, abraça também.
Ó, Zé Paulo, tu rapaz das costas.
Rádio Universidade de Coimbra. Informação.
Boa noite, são 10 horas. É tempo para notícias em síntese na RUC. A biblioteca do Polo 3 começa a funcionar em horário noturno a partir da próxima semana. A ideia é que os 3 mil alunos das faculdades de Medicina e de Farmácia beneficiem do espaço ainda na primeira época de exames. Atualmente a biblioteca está aberta das 8 da manhã até às 7 e meia da noite, respondendo a um dos alertas que o presidente do Núcleo de Estudantes de Medicina da Associação Académica, Rui Santos, deixou. O espaço vai passar a funcionar até à meia-noite. A Associação Académica de Coimbra assinou um protocolo com a BP que permite aos estudantes abastecerem em todos os postos da empresa com um desconto de 5 cêntimos por litro de combustível. Para além disso, a gasolineira paga outros 5 cêntimos à organização de estudantes. Para beneficiar deste acordo, basta ter um cartão personalizado que pode ser obtido no edifício da associação. Cada estudante pode ainda receber até mais 4 cartões para dar à família. A Académica joga amanhã com o Sporting de Braga. As novidades na convocatória de André Villas-Boas são o defesa à Moreirinha, o médio Cris e o avançado Lito. De fora estão Luís Nunes, André Fontes, Amaury Bischoff, Jonathan Bru e Ivo Ru, ainda Éder e Bruno Amaro devido a lesões. Amanhã, a partir das 6 da tarde, o jogo no Estádio Cidade de Coimbra é acompanhado em direto aqui em 107.9. Estamos a meio de janeiro, altura para os últimos concertos de Ano Novo. Um deles está a decorrer no Teatro Académico de Gil Vicente, com a atuação da Orquestra Clássica e da Orquestra de Sopros do Conservatório da Música de Coimbra. A atuação conta com obras de Handel, Mozart, Joel Canhão, Bert Appenmort e Philippe Charque. Ponto final na síntese informativa das 10. A informação volta amanhã às 4 da tarde. Tenha uma boa noite.
Mais informação em ruc.pt. Primeira Expo Tenda na Praça das Tendas. O maior startup nacional em tendas de exposição, casamentos, batizados e camping. Visita a Expo Tenda e habilite-se a ganhar um magnífico Dux Veteranorum.
RUC. Sempre de tenda armada. Só para profissionais.
Thank you. Boa noite, emissão de Preto no Branco para 16 de janeiro. Hoje por aqui vamos relembrar dois momentos trágicos da história dos últimos 100 anos. Não falamos do último século, atenção. Nesta primeira hora, escutamos o documentário Kursk, A Submarine in Troubled Waters, um trabalho de Jean-Michel Carré, que analisa a fundo o acidente que ditou a morte da tripulação do submarino russo Kursk no mar de Barents em 2000. Fiquem então desse lado. Por enquanto ficamos com a interpretação do tema de Kursk, da autoria de Matt Elliott, e logo depois então o documentário de Jean-Michel Carré. Boa noite, Preto no Branco, no éter dos 107.9 FM.
Vladimir Putin is elected for the first time as President of Russia. He has 4 years in front of him, 4 years in which to restore national pride, reinforce the army, and curb the oligarchs, the new multimillionaires who became powerful under Boris Yeltsin. Compared with Gorbachev and Yeltsin, Vladimir Putin's investiture is like a step back in history to the time of the Tsars.
During the last 15 years, Russia has opened up to the world. A form of democracy has emerged, and with it, a certain chaos. What will Vladimir Putin do?
Владимир Владимирович Путин вступил в должность президента Российской Федерации.
The new president's first aim is to reconstruct the pride of the nation and to reestablish Russia as the major world power it had been during the Cold War. 4 months after his investiture, he takes the first step. At the end of July, an impressive parade of the Russian fleet is organized, marking the beginning of the most important summer exercise since the Soviet Union. It is to remind the world that Russia's might is not to be challenged in the oceans of the planet. Little does Vladimir Putin suspect that a tragedy will take place in the depths of the ocean, jeopardizing his own political future and placing the whole world on the threshold of a possible Third World War. The exercise begins a few days later in the Barents Sea, situated in the extreme north of Russia. Scores of warships, fighter planes, and submarines are all concentrated in one small area. Amongst them, the Kursk, the latest of the 10 nuclear attack submarines of the Ante class.
Это считается лодка 21 века. По своим тактико-техническим характеристикам она не уступает ни одной подводной лодке в мире. И по радиоэлектронному вооружению, и по маневренным характеристикам. Американцы не зря эту лодку назвали «убийца авианосца».
The Kursk is as large as a football stadium and as high as an 8-story building. No submarine in Western fleets can compare with it for power and weaponry, and the Russians claim that its double hull makes it invincible. Amongst the high-tech weapons are the 24 Granit missiles with multi-directional nuclear warheads and an automatic guiding system. Each one has a nuclear strike capacity 40 times that of the bomb dropped on Hiroshima. The Kursk is also equipped with an incredible rocket torpedo called Shkval. Until now, no other country has been able to decipher its secrets. A system called supercavitation creates an envelope of gas, eliminating friction with the water, enabling it to travel at more than 320 miles an hour, almost 10 times faster than any Western torpedo. And the Russians are continuing to improve on it. It was this fearsome weapon that was perhaps at the heart of the Kursk tragedy.
A couple of tons at 300 knots is an awful lot of stored energy. It really is a bullet, and it would pass cleanly through the hull of another ship without the benefit of a warhead.
8 days after his investiture, Vladimir Putin signs an order for the arrest of an American, Edmund Pope, accused of spying on the Shkval torpedo. The trial is held at the end of July 2000. The Kursk tragedy occurs just a fortnight later. Pope, a retired U.S. Navy intelligence officer, is today a businessman in sensitive technology. Although he claims to be innocent of spying, there's no doubt that his investigations are important for American intelligence services.
We were introduced to Shkval in an exchange program in 1995. They told us they had a vehicle that could travel 300 miles per hour, 250 knots submerged. And we were skeptical. We didn't believe it could be done. Well, they had done it. They would be open to work with us and find commercial applications.
Pope obtained some of the plans during President Yeltsin's administration, when anything and everything can be bought more or less legally.
So the last trip, the one in which I was arrested, in fact, was my 27th trip to Russia.
Pope is arrested in his hotel with secret documents in his possession by the FSB, formerly known as the KGB. He's in discussion with the inventor of the Shkval, Anatoly Babkin, who is also placed under arrest. As usual for charges of espionage, Edmund Pope's trial is held behind closed doors. He is sentenced to 20 years hard labor,
but is released after 9 months of negotiations between Presidents Putin and Clinton. No one links up Pope's arrest with the Kursk, but his timely imprisonment was clearly to prevent him from passing on any more information to the Americans. At the start of the exercise, foreign spy ships are already on the scene. Intelligence services have little information, and they're more numerous than usual. Amongst others are two American attack submarines, the USS Memphis and the USS Toledo, a British nuclear submarine, a NATO intelligence ship, American satellites and intelligence planes, and a Norwegian spy vessel, the Marietta. Scientific American reported later that U.S. intelligence services had received information that Chinese officials had been invited to observe the exercise. Vladimir Putin's reconstruction of Russia includes selling weapons to enemies of the United States, which he needs for the economic and political development of his country. By courting the Chinese, he is playing a dangerous game.
I have heard from different sources that there were two or three Chinese officials aboard as observers. I know that the Chinese have purchased Shkvals. So if you had observers on there, they were courting the Chinese to sell them more advanced versions.
In reality, this naval exercise in the Barents Sea is at the heart of a highly strategic operation, one that could lead to a major world conflict involving Russia, America, and China. On Saturday, August 12th, 8:51 a.m., the Kursk announces to the control tower of the flagship, Peter the Great, that it is diving 60 feet to periscope depth to prepare the firing of the torpedo. 11:28 a.m. Inside the Kursk, all is set to fire the new torpedo. In Moscow, Vladimir Putin leaves the Kremlin for his holidays on the Black Sea. At this very moment, an explosion takes place in the front of the submarine in the torpedo compartment. The general alarm is sounded. A breach has been torn in the double hull. Normally, the commander would press the emergency button, releasing the air ballast to send the submarine back up to the surface. But he doesn't. Nor does he signal for the distress buoy to be released. On the contrary, instead of heading for the surface, the engines are boosted to full throttle. All the evidence points to an attack from another vessel. 2 minutes and 15 seconds later, there is a second explosion.
The second one, which had caught our eye initially, was a very powerful explosion, at least 100 times bigger than the first one.
The second explosion tears an enormous breach in the front of the submarine. The Kursk plunges 300 feet to the ocean floor. The crew shut down the two nuclear reactors, and 23 men out of the 118 managed to scramble to the rear of the vessel where the escape hatch is situated. All the foreign vessels, as well as the Russians, had recorded the two explosions. And yet, Admiral Popov, in charge of the exercise, orders the flagship to leave the area. He returns to the mainland by helicopter and disappears for several hours. An ultra-secret mini-submarine, the AS-15, is immediately sent down to inspect the Kursk with a special intelligence unit of deep-sea divers. The press later demands why they weren't used for the rescue operation. But the authorities remain mute, and their investigation remains top secret. Later in the afternoon, depth charges are dropped around the Kursk. According to the Russians, it is to summon the submarine to surface. According to foreign experts, it is to warn vessels to keep away from the area. The Kursk is in very shallow depths for a submarine about to fire a torpedo. Even on the ocean floor, the wreck can be seen from the surface. If it were placed in a vertical position, its tail would emerge from the water by 150 feet. And the escape hatch itself would be well above the surface. Despite this, the Russian Navy declares that it took more than 30 hours to locate it. It is only 2 days later, on Monday, the 14th of August, that the tragedy is announced on television.
В чрезвычайном происшествии в Баренцевом море при проведении учений Северного флота в установленное время...
A fax is issued to the press by a Navy spokesman, declaring the first official lies. Kursk on seabed, Sunday, 13th. Minor technical incident. No nuclear arms on board.
Атомные лодки на грунт не ложатся, и это все подводники, служившие на атомных лодках, знают.
No warship ever goes to sea without a few of its normal weapons. Although you intend to fire practice weapons as part of the exercise, you may be diverted during the exercise to a real incident.
The families of the submariners arrive in Murmansk, the Kursk's naval base, still uncertain about the fate of the crew. 4 days after the accident, no one has been informed of the exact names of the men on board that day. Kursk, like all nuclear submarines, has two crews. The families are not told which of them was on duty that day. A journalist from Komsomolskaya Pravda finally obtains the information from an officer of the fleet in return for an 18,000 ruble bribe. It is on reading this newspaper that the crew's relatives finally learn the names of those on board. Admiral Motsak, one of the officers in charge of the exercise, makes an announcement reviving hopes. We know that there are survivors tapping out SOS messages on the hull. These messages inform us that they have enough oxygen for 10 days. 5 days after the public announcement of the tragedy, Putin addresses the journalists from his holiday resort on the Black Sea.
Можно только констатировать, что все, что можно делать для спасения лодки и экипажа, все моряками предпринимается.
Почему Путин отдыхал там, если здесь наши дети погибали? Почему он там отдыхал? Почему? Почему у нас такая безвразие творится? Докуда это будет твориться? Докуда будут наши дети пропасть?
Нету информации. Почему вот эта Теребелька рядом? Вот оно. Почему нету? Вот штаб. Почему оттуда ничего нету? Все на Москву идут, а потом Москва нам диктует. Вот там то, вот там то.
1 week goes by before the authorities and naval officials finally agree to face the families. Television newsreels show a mother attacking Ilya Klebanov, the vice prime minister. This woman's outburst is unthinkable in Russia. A doctor approaches her with a tranquilizer ready to be injected. The doctor quickly disappears. The woman turns around, only to see the army officers enveloping her. She collapses, unconscious, into their arms. The following day, these disturbing images have disappeared from Russian newsreels. In pure Soviet style, officers firmly invite the press to leave the room.
Я не понимаю, как
как политик, так слабо владеет аудиторией. И именно после его выступления случилась вот та истерика, и не готовы были отвечать на вопросы прямо.
One week is lost because of lies, deceit, and political negotiations. One week in which the surviving crew could have been saved.
Les 11 pays de l'OTAN ont proposé leur aide à la Russie cet après-midi, mais Moscou ne juge pas pour l'instant l'aide occidentale supplémentaire nécessaire.
Nevertheless, a British cargo plane leaves the UK with the LR5, a highly sophisticated rescue submarine.
Initially, we thought we'd get approval for me to go to Severomorsk, wherever they were running their operation from. Sadly, we weren't given approval to enter Russian airspace. The best thing to do in that case was to get on board the Norman Pioneer with the rescue vessel, and we actually enlisted the help of the Norwegian Army.
The rescue vessel, the Normand Pioneer, takes several long days to cover the distance to the site of the tragedy. Norway also sends out another vessel, the Seaway Eagle, with professional Norwegian and British divers on board. For a whole week, the Russians had insisted that due to poor weather conditions, strong currents, the steep list of the submarine, and the damage created by the explosion, evacuating the survivors was impossible.
And it was then it became clear that actually quite a lot of the things we'd been hearing weren't necessarily accurate. There really was visibility, the currents weren't too bad, and the attitude, the list of the submarine on the seabed wasn't beyond the limits. So we felt at that point that we could probably assist.
The press and the families continue to hound Putin. He finally accepts the offers of help from the English and the Norwegians. The following day, the Norwegian and British divers are authorized to dive down to the wreck, but not to approach the front of the submarine where the explosion had occurred.
We took the divers down pretty quick and recognized that the ship was lying there. There was no current. It was lying horizontal. There was the mating ring for the rescue submarine. It had been reported that that was destroyed. It was not destroyed at all.
The Russians had said it was impossible to open the hatches, and yet Norwegian and British divers managed to open the outside one in 25 minutes. Once inside the submarine, the camera shows that the vessel is swamped and that there are no survivors.
Sadly, of course, by the time we got to use the LR5, it was all too late.
Admiral Popov decides to make a public address.
Растите детей, растите сыновей. А меня простите за то, что не уберег вас от такого.
He adds off camera, I shall spend the rest of my days searching for whoever is responsible for this tragedy.
Понимаете, это уже есть намек на то, что эту трагедию, так сказать, собственно, ее организовали.
The press now suggests that the real reason the catastrophe is being concealed is that possible survivors would have revealed the truth. The Kursk affair has become officially classified as a state secret. Rumors concerning the cause for the accident multiply daily. Everyone has his own theory. Some are proposed by the press, others by the Navy and various experts. Two main theories emerge. The first, given by the Russian admirals, incriminates the British or American submarines in the area, involving a collision or the firing of a torpedo. Western diplomats immediately refute the presence of their vessels on the scene. They offer a second explanation. The accidental explosion of an antiquated hydrogen peroxide-fueled torpedo, abandoned 50 years ago by other fleets because of its instability. Russian people claim that by accusing the West, Russian admirals are throwing up a smokescreen by putting the blame on someone else. However, in spite of public opinion, the prime minister prefers to opt for the faulty torpedo theory. 12 days after the catastrophe, Putin appoints one of his men, Vladimir Ustinov, the general prosecutor, to direct the legal inquiry. He immediately declares himself in favor. The faulty torpedo theory becomes the official version before the inquiry has even begun. It seems difficult to imagine that an antiquated torpedo was to be used in an exercise aimed, in Vladimir Putin's own words, at proving Russia's naval supremacy. Everyone accepts this explanation. Everyone but the sailors themselves. It is the only explanation which allows Putin to dispel suggestions of foreign responsibility. At about the same time, a team from the flagship Peter the Great discovers a foreign distress buoy.
Вот смотрите, вдруг появилась информация о том, что в районе обнаружены, все закрыли. Говорят, что якобы буя не было. Ну, я думаю на 100%, что этот буй был. Это аварийный буй с подводной лодки «Мемфис».
The admirals present evidence on videotape of a collision with another submersible. Tears can be easily discerned in the Kursk's hull, as well as a strange hole with the metal turning inwards. Such an amount of damage could hardly have been caused by a mere collision. The presence of the USS Memphis and the USS Toledo on the scene could explain the two undeniable impacts in the hull. And if the two American submarines were involved in the Kursk incident, it could only be linked with the presence of the Chinese during the exercise. By selling them the latest model of the Shkval, the Russians are continuing to conflict with American interests. The Americans are incapable of neutralizing it and would lose their naval supremacy in Southeast Asia.
Having a weapon like the Shval puts them in the same sort of league as Western forces, and that's a worrying development in terms of world balance.
The hesitations and deceit of the authorities surrounding the whole affair indicate that the official explanation for the catastrophe was in fact contrived for diplomatic reasons. A study of the contradictions in the official inquiry, information from intelligence sources, and a detailed investigation in Russia, Norway, the UK, and the United States have helped piece the puzzle together. We can now try and imagine what may really have happened on that fateful day. That morning, on the 12th of August, the two American submarines in the zone are both given a precise mission. The USS Memphis is to observe the Kursk from a distance. The USS Toledo is to openly shadow the Kursk to signify American disapproval of the demonstration to the Chinese. Shadowing is always a dangerous operation, especially in these shallow depths where there is a great deal of magnetic interference and maneuvering is difficult. Its obstruction movements around the Kursk, the Toledo comes perhaps too close, and there is a collision. The incident is recorded by the flagship Peter the Great, which sounds the alarm, causing the rest of the fleet to close in on the Kursk and fighter planes to take off from their base. Admiral Popov returns to land with the Chinese admirals and has a conference with the head of command. The difference in size between the Russian submarine and the Toledo is enormous. It's as if a fishing trawler had rammed the Queen Mary. The Toledo is badly damaged and limps off. The second American submarine, the Memphis, moves in to cover its escape. As it does so, It detects the opening of the bow cap and the typical sound of the loading of a Shkval torpedo. The Shkval is so fast that if it was fired, the Memphis would have no time to dive or make for the surface. So fearing a retaliation, the commander decides to defend his submarine by firing a Mark 48. The American torpedo cuts cleanly into the torpedo compartment, exploding its particles inside. The Kursk seems hardly affected and pursues its route.
We've seen guns trained at opposing forces. We've seen the covers taken off missile launchers. But no one has ever gone as far as to pull the trigger. And here we are seeing the unusual circumstance of perhaps someone having pulled the trigger.
Все-таки российская подводная лодка была торпедирована иностранной подводной лодкой и, скорее всего, американской подводной лодкой «Мемфис».
Captain Dotsenko, naval historian and university professor, has written a book entitled «Who Shot the Kursk?», published by the Association of Russian Naval Officers. He quotes the Mark 48 as being the American torpedo which hit the Russian submarine. The following chain of events is more dramatic than anyone could have imagined. The first explosion creates a flash fire which detonates the torpedoes on board, including the highly explosive Shkvals. The second explosion sends the submarine plunging to the seabed. At close range, the Memphis itself is seriously shaken by the shockwave. The Russians discover oil leaks on the sea surface. They appear to come from the escaping submarine. Navigating slowly, the Memphis is easily tracked down by the Russians. It takes 7 days instead of two to reach the Norwegian port of Bergen. But what has become of the USS Toledo? The Americans have done their best to help the Russians forget about it. The Memphis had in fact served as a decoy, enabling the Toledo to escape across the Atlantic to the United States. Russian Secret Services later learned that the badly damaged Toledo had been concealed in a closed dock, but the Americans refused to allow it to be inspected. It is at this moment that an astonishing article appears on the Pravda website. Quote, on Saturday, 12th of August, an incident occurred in the Barents Sea which almost led to the start of a Third World War. For several days, world peace hung on a thread, and a political faux pas could have led to an exchange of nuclear strikes. Igor Sergeyev, the Minister of Defense, informed the President in Sochi of the event. It was decided against his immediate return to Moscow, as his presence in Central Command headquarters would have indicated Russia's preparation for a confrontation. Fortunately, the incident in the Barents Sea has been resolved diplomatically. Presidents Clinton and Putin have negotiated a peaceful conclusion to the affair. The theory that there had been American involvement in the tragedy, even if this was motivated by the presence of Chinese officials, would not have been tolerated. It could have triggered hostilities or a return to the Cold War situation.
Таким образом, и со стороны Запада, и со стороны Путина отнюдь не могло быть в случае гипотетическом, если действительно было столкновение. Так вот, ни с той, ни с другой стороны не могло быть стремления портить отношения. В данном случае Курск показал еще раз.
I don't think that the Kursk should be looked at as anything but part of the tail of the Cold War, in that they were still developing a weapon system that was started in the Cold War, whose principal purpose was to attack American aircraft carriers.
К сожалению, она продолжается. Продолжается долгая и застаревшая болезнь, потому что Сегодня главной ее причиной является недоверие Америки к России.
All admirals in the Northern Fleet have their own tense memories of the Cold War. The number of submarines at sea resulted in a chain of accidents between American and Russian vessels, causing the death of hundreds of submariners. These accidents have remained top secret, although many still lie corroding on the seabed with their nuclear reactors and warheads. Submarines are the only vessels in the world carrying nuclear weapons for which no international conventions have been signed. Two weeks after the tragedy, American intelligence services finally informed the New York Times that an American submarine, the USS Memphis, was observing the Kursk during the exercise. At the same moment, we learned that George Tenet, the head of the CIA, had secretly arrived in Moscow 3 days after the tragedy.
Раньше никогда к нам не приезжал директор ЦРУ. Чего тут ездить? Тем более на высшем уровне был принят директор ЦРУ. Тоже какие-то, видимо, решали вопросы, связанные вот именно с урегулированием вот этих отношений, связанных с гибелью Курска.
Presidents Putin and Clinton exchanged telephone calls. A few days later, a Russian debt to the United States is canceled, and the Russians receive a new $10.5 billion loan.
You know, the Kursk, in a way, it was almost the September 11th of the Russians, in the sense that this terrible thing happened, it exposed a huge vulnerability. The government did not really address the underlying questions as to why this happened. There was no transparency, there was no openness. It seems like Washington and Moscow have some sort of joint interest in keeping from the rest of us what really happened.
If the Kursk tragedy is really due to an American torpedo, it is easier to understand Vladimir Putin's silence. He needs time to work out an explanation for the tragedy, which will satisfy both the Russians and the rest of the world. Vladimir Putin is under severe attack, yet paradoxically, it is now that he shows his quality as a true head of state. Despite the pressure put on him by the public, by military authorities and the press, he demonstrates his capacity to deal with a major conflict. The president finally leaves his summer residence to have a prearranged meeting with church representatives. He asks the Orthodox clergy, largely controlled by the KGB, to support the families in their grief. Putin knows the importance of the church for the general public. This support is all the more important as such a human tragedy can no longer be kept secret as in Soviet times. For the first time since his election, President Vladimir Putin has gone down by 10% in the polls. He knows that now is the time to take political action. He decides to go to Murmansk, where he's received by the principal admirals and members of his government, and where the families are waiting to meet him. His first visit is to the submarine commander's wife. Shots taken by the sole authorized television show the dilapidated dwelling of the commander of the most prestigious submarine in Russia. That evening, his meeting with the families lasts 3 hours. Once again, only state television is permitted to film and to broadcast short extracts. Two German journalists who have managed to enter the hall give an alarming account of the meeting to an independent channel. They report that the families listened to President Putin as he gave his version of the situation before violently attacking him. accusing him of being incapable of governing and demanding the resignation of several admirals. Vladimir Putin declares a day of national mourning. The families refuse to let him accompany them to the site of the Kursk. This hostility towards a president has never yet been seen in Russia.
Государство быстро откликнулось на все события происходящие и стало оказывать нам помощь. Самая была первая помощь, это когда стали выплачивать задолженности.
For the first time in history, the families of victims of the nation are given financial compensation. They receive between $25,000 and $35,000. This is such a huge amount in Russia that some think he is trying to buy them off to prevent a court case. In the atmosphere of suspicion surrounding the tragedy and the death of the crew, Putin decides to present the accident as being an example of the degeneration of the army and the state. He declares that his intention is to rehabilitate the nation. To do this, he needs the press, the army, and politicians on his side. He puts action to words.
J'ajoute enfin que Vladimir Poutine a annoncé une hausse de 20% des salaires dans les forces armées, la police et la justice à compter du 1er décembre.
When Vladimir Ustinov is asked to conduct the legal inquiry, the director of the FSB, Nikolai Patruchev, is appointed to second him. Putin then also asks Ustinov to deal with a pending legal suit against press baron oligarchs Vladimir Gusinsky, already in exile, and Boris Berezovsky, his new target.
I got a strong pressure from state, from general prosecutor office, from FSB people, and in autumn 2000 I had to leave Russia.
Je pense que le problème de la presse était plus ou moins résolu par Poutine depuis Kursk. C'est là où le pouvoir et Poutine en personne a vu toute la différence entre la presse libre et la presse contrôlée. C'est là où il a compris que pour lui, le contrôle de presse, c'est crucial.
With the next accident, there will be no journalists to ask the right questions, and people will have to believe what is standing in official newspaper and official TV stations, and they will have to believe in it.
To appease public opinion, Putin announces that the submariners' bodies will be brought to the surface. The Norwegian branch of Halliburton, formerly directed by Dick Cheney, is chosen to carry out the operation.
Удалось обнаружить и поднять на поверхность тела четырех подводников. Один из них опознан. Это командир турбинной группы Колесников.
Но там были обнаружены три записки. Две из них – это записка Колесникова и записка Садиленко. Они датированы. Из этих записок было известно, что после взрыва подводники из 7-го, 8-го отсека и какое-то время они там жили.
Only part of the letter is shown to the press. The other pages are kept secret. 12 bodies are brought up to the surface. The others remain imprisoned in the wreck until it is decided to raise the whole submarine. A ceremony is carried out in the presence of the members of the government, and then the bodies are kept for post-mortem. A few days later, a journalist from the newspaper Jizin quotes one of the forensic experts, Igor Gryaznov. He reveals that a second letter was found in Dmitry Kolesnikov's pocket, dated August 15th, 3 days after the tragedy. It is addressed to the head authorities and contains information on the accident. He adds that Vice Admiral Motsak had explicitly ordered them not to reveal its contents. The letter is never made public. This discovery brought to the foreground once more the idea that the sailors were perhaps left to die.
Семьи экипажа погибших на Курске и попросили представлять их интересы. Они признаны потерпевшими по уголовному делу.
Ordinary men and women decide to file a court case against the state. In Russia, this again is a precedent. And it may be this that convinces Putin to raise the wreck and the dead submariners.
Наш адвокат Борис Абрамович Кузнецов, значит, вот еще раз говорю, работает над делом сейчас. Тот, кто виноват, тот должен ответить за свои дела. А то у нас получается так, что-то случилось, а виноватых, как всегда, у нас нет.
The government finds a solution to raise the wreck, which will both conceal the causes of the tragedy and convince the public of Putin's goodwill. Many Russian and international companies make proposals to bring up the whole wreck, but these are rejected. Finally, the Dutch company, Mammoth, is chosen for the operation. It is the only one which refuses to raise the torpedo section. This is sawn off and left on the seabed, thus carefully avoiding the discovery of the Kursk's hidden secrets. The operation costs $130 million, double the yearly budget of the Russian Navy for the submarine fleet. This time, the whole of the international press is invited when the submarine, minus the front section, is finally raised to the surface. Hotel rooms, creation of websites, conference rooms, nothing is too grand for this impressive ceremony. During a posthumous ceremony to decorate the victims, Nadezhda Tilik takes the floor. She had already spoken out during the first meeting between the families and the officials and had been forcibly sedated.
Хочется, чтобы повзрослевшие дети погибших знали, что отцы погибли из-за халатности, головотяпства, из-за просто из-за равнодушия высоких великих мира сего. Мне искренне жаль виновных в этой трагедии и тех людей, которых заставляли врать родным и близким погибших. Им придется нести в душе тяжкий груз и великий грех. Наберитесь мужества и покайтесь, пока еще не поздно.
The Dutch barge arrives, towing the Kursk. Little by little, the Tsar's emblem, the double-headed eagle, emerges from the sea. It was ironically chosen for the Kursk to represent the rebirth of Russian supremacy. Vladimir Ustinov, the general prosecutor, the investigators, and the forensic experts board the submarine.
А что значит вот это отверстие на борту подводной лодки? Я видела его сама. Вмятина в борту внутрь и отверстие внутрь лодки.
I am surprised to see an obvious round hole in the Kursk's hull. It looks like a torpedo strike. It must be a torpedo strike. Something was happening that we still don't know about.
The side of the Kursk with the trace of the torpedo impact is quickly made out of bounds to cameras. Only six of the 24 missiles seem to have been slightly damaged by the explosion. Their nuclear heads are sent to be dismantled at a secret military base. According to some experts, the main reason for the recovery of the wreck was to avoid foreign fleets or terrorists from getting hold of information about the top secret missiles. The Russians finally admit that there were indeed nuclear warheads on board. All the bodies from the Kursk have been extricated from the wreck and autopsied. In order to minimize Putin's delay in accepting foreign assistance, Ustinov had officially announced that the majority of the crew were pulverized by the explosion, and therefore could not have been saved. Yet only 3 out of 118 bodies could not be identified, and these were found in the torpedo compartment itself. The families of the victims will have waited 400 days to retrieve the bodies of their loved ones. Many feel the price they have paid to preserve a state secret is too high. This time, the press does not dare allude to the different responsibilities for the accident, whether they be Russian, American, or Chinese. Putin's aim for state control of the media has been achieved. The polls are there to prove it. He has gained 20% in popularity since meeting the families and the raising of the bodies. He's furious about the difficult situation his admirals had put him in by openly accusing the Americans in the Kursk affair. He fires 10 of them, 2 of whom are key figures, Popov and Motsak. Putin assures that no one is directly responsible, and the 2 admirals are given other comfortable functions. He now addresses the political question. Ilya Klebanov loses his position as vice prime minister, as do the minister of defense, Igor Sergeyev, and the home secretary. All those who had supported the idea of American responsibilities are struck down by Putin's lightning. The United States has been completely cleared of any responsibility, and Vladimir Putin can now openly pursue his allegiance with George W. Bush. At the end of 2002, Vladimir Ustinov makes the results of the official inquiry public. His report starts as follows, quote, "The disaster took place at 11:28 a.m. Moscow time due to a practice torpedo which set off a chain of explosions in the torpedo compartment, etc., etc." The 2,000-page report is full of contradictions and ends with the classic conclusion, dismissed for lack of evidence. The wreck of the Kursk is transported to a secret military island where it is dismantled and melted down. The Russian fleet blows up the remainder of the wreck, the torpedo section, which had been left on the sea floor. Any means of knowing the whole truth of the matter is now eradicated once and for all. Two monuments are erected in memory of the 118 deceased submarine crew members, one in Moscow and the other at its naval base in Vidyayevo. As for the families of the Kursk disaster, they are still waiting for the results of their vain court case against the state.
They were dealing with nuclear submarines, with dangerous weaponry, with exactly the kind of situation that could lead to some tragedy in the future. And for that reason alone, we need, in America and Russia, globally, we need to know what really went on there. And if we can't find that out, then we are very far from being able to control the forces of militarism, of bureaucracy, the strongmen who want their kind of democracy that gets their results, whether it be George W. Bush in Florida, whether it be Putin and his attempt to kind of create the trappings of democracy without the substance in Moscow.
Спасите наши души, мы бредим от удушья. Спасите наши души, спешите к нам, услышьте нас на суше.